Hello, I'm Eleanor McDowell. I am the creator of Radio Atlas. I was looking at the podcast industry and it seemed like a really good time from what I'm reading to pivot away from video. So welcome to Radio Atlas's first and probably last audio-only episode. I am speaking to you because Radio Atlas has just turned 10 years old this year, and to celebrate, this Thursday at Sheffield Dockfest, I am doing a special birthday screening, playing some delightful shorts from the last 10 years. If you live in Sheffield or you're going to Sheffield Dockfest, please come and join me on Thursday evening. But in the meantime, to justify whatever this is, I'm going to share an episode from a podcast that I really love, that I feel like if you're listening to Radio Atlas, you would probably love too. It's called the Selects podcast. Selects is a home for brilliant, weird, old radio documentaries. Recently, they shared a few old Radio Atlas documentaries, and I had a conversation with the host, Mitra Kaboli, about why Radio Atlas exists and lots of other feelings about the radio industry. Thank you for listening to Radio Atlas's first and likely last audio-only podcast.
From PRX's Radiotopia, hello and welcome to the Selects podcast. I'm Mitra Kaboli. The Selects podcast is a show that is bringing you unearthed audio works that we found buried in web archives, radio streams, and old podcasts. They've come to us through the recommendations and inspirations of some of the most talented audio creators working today. And today, we have an interview with radio producer and founder of Radio Atlas, Eleanor McDowell. We've recently acquired a new collection of fantastic non-English language documentaries that Eleanor has translated through her project, Radio Atlas. We have 5 translated works available for subscribers of Selects that I think everybody should check out. Eleanor is one of the most prolific audio producers, and I'm not just saying that because I interviewed her. Her work as a producer and through Radio Atlas, she has completely expanded my understanding of how I work within this medium. Here is my conversation with Eleanor McDowell. Eleanor, thank you so much for joining me on the Selects podcast.
It's honestly an honor, truly one of my favorite podcasts at the moment. It's such a joy listening to all of this archive work you're pulling out.
Ah, thank you so much. Well, I just want to get started. You started Radio Atlas about 10 years ago. Radio Atlas is a website and a podcast that translates work into English. Can you tell me what the inspiration behind that was for you?
Yeah, sure. So I'm based in London, and kind of a lot of the audio doc world that I'm in is flowing across languages. You know, we would go to kind of European competitions and like hear lots of different things from different places. But the way I would always experience stuff would be with this like huge paper transcript that would be printed out and put on your knee, and you'd be like reading along thinking, shit, is this the grandmother who's talking? What's going on? Has the sound of the bicycle bell happened by now? And you kind of get so lost in reading, you're losing this thing that you love about audio, which is just this listening experience. But I would get these kind of glimpses of these radio features and ways of making things that felt so expansive and exciting in comparison to a lot of the things that I was sort of hearing at the time on kind of UK radio. And I remember years ago, a friend of mine, a woman called Nina Garthwaite, started this incredible space that's still going called In the Dark. And they put on these listening cinemas. And Nina had a background in film, and she wanted to share this Norwegian piece at one of their earliest screenings. And so she just subtitled it. And I sat and listened to this in a cinema, and it was like one of the first times that I was able to just fully lose myself, borderline convince myself that I spoke Norwegian as I was kind of listening to it. And suddenly it just sort of opens up this whole world. And so the kind of honest answer of like where it comes from is I basically like said to Nina, I really want this thing to exist. Do you mind if I steal what you're doing? And she was very nice and kind of let me do it. And so I've just been like quietly subtitling documentaries I find exciting for the last 10 years in like evenings and weekends. I've got a very vibrant social life, I do want to say. It's just, you know, putting that in the cracks around everything else, obviously.
Well, speaking of the subtitles, I remember, I guess it was about 10 years ago, you guys did an event in New York City, and it was at like the Museum of the Moving Image, and they have a movie theater.
Yeah, First Look Festival. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember going to that event and experiencing it for the first time. And one of the things that I noticed, and anyone who's watched anything on Radio Atlas would also notice, that the subtitles are not regular subtitles. They're not the way that we're used to them. They're timed. And I guess I'm curious, that first time that you at In the Dark, that Norwegian piece that was subtitled, was it also timed?
So as far as I remember, you'd have to ask me that. Like, I remember it being, the text would come up in sort of blocks on the screen. So it would be kind of similar. It would be in the center of the screen. So not like in the way that cinematic subtitles work, because they're always just trying to like get your eye to go back to the image. So I think that's something that I was kind of playing. Like, I was really interested in this idea of like, how do you subtitle for the ear? Because obviously in cinema, the whole point is they want you to be looking at the image. It's image making. It's this sort of visual language. And so the subtitles are trying to give you like just enough information to navigate that. But when you're trying to think about what it is to subtitle sound, like what's fascinating about translation and how you do it and kind of how hard it is in audio is that so much of what we're trying to convey is about the music of the voice, is about breath and rhythm. Has someone got good comic timing? And, you know, or are they kind of getting halfway through a sentence and then they're having to kind of stop and catch their breath? Their voice is cracking. It's overcome with emotion. And so I think just to give you like the words that are said, you lose the majority of what we're doing. And, you know, you lose that spirit of a person that kind of exists in the voice. So it's like, it's obviously not perfect to get people to be looking at a screen, but I hope that it's like trying to get you close to that experience of listening in your own language.
And having to subtitle work like that, that sound in that way, where I think about the work that we do, and so much of it just requires listening. Like, you have to listen over and over and over again. And it sounds like you also have to do the same thing to subtitle this work. Like, obvious, this sounds quite laborious. Like, are you there like being like, breath, pot, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's sort of like listening in slow motion. So I think it takes me like, depending on the doc, maybe an hour to do 5 minutes, like carefully listening to things. But it's kind of, I mean, it can be a way that you really learn that you don't like something. Or it can just be this like really deep connection with, like, you know, the work that you get to hear. I love getting to hear it close up, and you kind of notice things really differently when you're kind of hearing it slowly and you're paying attention to the rhythm of the edit. Like, sometimes you feel the rhythm of the edit on like how it sits on the screen, where you can sort of feel pace and time in the way that these things are kind of visually coming up in front of you, something that's sort of semi-invisible as you're listening. So yeah, it is slow, but like, it's a very rewarding close attention for me. I enjoy it.
I hope you do, since you're spending so much time doing that.
Yeah.
And back to the first time seeing that, all those Radio Atlas pieces, it kind of, I think you were saying this also, that when you were first experiencing these docs that were in different languages, that you used the word expansive. And I kind of had a similar experience where it kind of changed what I thought was possible in documentary. Like, for example, in some cases, there's like less hand-holding.
Yeah. I mean, I think because we might be talking specifically about like, and I don't know if you would use this language in the same way that we would, the idea of the radio feature. Do you, how does that sort of land in an American context?
We don't use that word, but I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I think like, because, you know, obviously European broadcasting traditions are like as vast and expansive as kind of North American ones. You know, everyone has their own like radio landscape that's smashing all these different types of things together. But I am really drawn to and excited by this thing called the radio feature that kind of grew in this very weird, shape-shifting, nebulous way. Like in the UK, you've got this radio features department that starts growing around, like, I think it's the kind of 1930s and runs until the 1960s. And in that era, it's really entangled with like drama and a really novelistic imagination for the world and poetic. And you actually have poets, you know, working in that department. So that's where like Louis McNeice is working. You know, it's where, you should be able to fact check this, but like Under Milk Wood is kind of coming from. And you have this real blurring of, you know, a novelistic imagination and documentary reality. And so you'll see a lot of different things. So for example, like the old Leica's Pathetic Symphony that's on Radio Atlas at the moment in the Selects selection, like some of the language that's used to talk about that is that it's coming from a drama department, right? But it's, you know, it is documentary material. This is real life, but it's with this sort of imagination for something that is, you know, in the poetic. It's kind of, there's a book that I really love that's written by an old radio producer called Donald McWhinney called The Art of Radio. And he sort of talks about this like nebulous type of radio that we don't really have a language for that blends poetry and reality and makes you feel like your feet are like hovering above the ground, like up in the air. And I think there's something about this world of montage stuff that's not really, there's not a lot of hand holding, you're just kind of plunged into a literary world somehow.
I mean, that's what I want. I want to be hovering above the ground when I listen to stuff. Because you mentioned old Leica Pathetic Symphony, just a Croatian work from 1975 that you just added to Radio Atlas and that we have on the Selects channel. Yeah. Can you talk a little more about the piece? Like you're saying, it's like kind of coming out of a radio drama tradition.
So it's, I think those lines are like much more blurry and intentionally blurry. Like it's weird because right now I'm actually having a doc mixed that's going out this week that's kind of talking about some of this stuff. It's about like archives and radios evaporating memory, and you know, this feeling that you're saying of like you're listening to all these things and you're like, oh shit, this world is so much more kind of expansive and big. But I think that's not even something in the worlds we work in that's like confined to a language barrier. I think we are working in this medium that is constantly like disappearing, evaporating into the air. You know, literally a lot of the old radio broadcasts weren't recorded, don't exist. So there's huge parts of that history that you can only access sort of archaeologically, piecing together reviews and people's memories of things. And then the stuff that you can get is sort of spottily recorded. You're unlikely to be able to kind of hear it in these spaces. So it's, yeah, it's interesting. I don't know how you feel like working in this world as a maker to kind of navigate an art form where there's huge chunks where it's like, you don't know what's existed or what's been possible. But yeah, in this program, I'm sort of looking at that language around the radio feature and what you call something. And I was talking to this really wonderful radio historian academic called David Hendy, who sort of says, well, the people who are calling it radio feature are like intentionally keeping it vague. They're like anti the literalism of the time where things are kind of really sort of, this is facts and information and I'm giving you something. They are actively trying to make something where they can be like, oh, well, it's, you know, it's whatever we said. It's like, it could be. So I think that kind of blurriness between, is this coming from a drama department? Is this coming from a documentary department? Is this radiophonic art? Is it poetry? Is it, you know, it's sort of, it's all quite intentionally blurry, which is great creatively, but it's also quite tricky when, you know, we're in a moment where I think a lot of what we're hearing is much more kind of literal, hand-holdy, you know, no thought left on sound designed. So it's why, like, I found it so thrilling listening to old Leica, you know, which I think is, it's being kind of broadcast on the radio in this sort of radio art slot in the 1970s with the most exceptionally salty language throughout, which like my, I had sort of heard about it through this lovely woman, the daughter of one of the makers, who knew a woman that I knew who was sort of very kind, who was a producer herself. And together, the two of them had kind of translated this work and got permission to broadcast it. My friend had written to me and sort of said like, yeah, I hadn't quite realized how much swearing there is just throughout this entire thing. But you sort of listen to this, it's just broadcast on the radio. And it is, it has these vast sections that are just pure sound. Like I think the opening, you're just hearing this kind of rush of water, these sort of long stretches of kind of landscape. And then you start entering into these really, really evocative and at times quite like visceral scenes. Like there's a whole scene around kind of castrating a, from the sounds of it, very slippery pig. Or this like fight between a kind of very officious sort of man who's helping kind of run this national park and a man who is like illegally trying to fish there, where it's sort of an almost kind of slapstick fight for his kind of fishing rod. But yeah, just to kind of hear that and think, oh, there was just this period of time where this would just be coming out the radio and it wouldn't be a big deal. And like this could exist as well, as it's so exciting.
It's impossible to imagine.
But then it's, I mean, it's really, because you must feel this with selects all the time where you're kind of, you're re-encountering this archive and thinking, oh Christ, like this was possible. This was possible. And it.
All the time. Yeah. Sometimes I listen to stuff and I'm like, oh my God, they put this on the radio. Like, I was like, what? I was born 20 years too late. Like, you know.
But there's something kind of hopeful in that you're like, it's always being made and remade and reimagined.
It's true.
And like, we're not, you know, to put a more upbeat spin on it, like, we're not trapped in this kind of canon of dusty old men who have kind of shaped the sound of what everything has to be. It's like, no one can really say what this stuff has to be because no one really remembers. So it could be anything.
I've been spending a lot of time in film world. And so filmmakers, they're like aware of this history and tradition. And I'm jealous of that a little bit because I think in some ways that creates this platform or podium for film to sit on. And I was at a documentary festival and I had the piece that I made last year in it. And during the Q&A, there's always a Q&A. Someone was like, why didn't you make a film? And I was like, I'm not a filmmaker. But I and I've encountered that quite a bit, actually, putting my documentaries in like festivals that are traditionally film festivals or whatever. I've been encountering this thing where it's just like, why aren't you making a film? And I feel the lack of respect.
Well, so I mean, one of my gentle bugbears is how many of these like film documentary festivals call themselves documentary festivals, and then like basically their audio thing is one panel where it's like, couldn't sell your film, why not make it into a podcast with all the stuff that you've done? And it's so sort of disrespectful and disengaged for actually, like, you know, when you think about the kind of audience for a documentary that's getting a cinematic release or whatever, it's kind of going on an art house, like the kind of vast audiences that are hearing this like weird shit on the radio, like, are so
much larger, actually.
Much larger, but like with very, very little kind of media literacy or understanding and things. And I think I kind of flicker back and forth about how I feel about a lot of this stuff. Like, we have a real language problem in terms of, we can't necessarily, you know, we're talking about the word radio feature, for example, but it's like, that's not really something that I would ever use to someone to explain what I do, because I don't think it really means anything to anyone. And so, like, what happens if you can't name anything in this world? Like, I think that has real world implications for, like, labor rights, for funding possibilities, for, you know, like, are you allowed to call yourself an art or not? At the moment, like, I've been fascinated by what we're doing with the word podcast just in the last year, where it's like, podcast, obviously, you know, thank you for the lovely introduction when you're putting out Women on the Ice, where you're like, a visualized podcast today. And I was like, it's one of the oldest visualized, but well, not the oldest, they've been around forever. But like, you know, that podcasting was like this world of something that you kind of listened to and it was intimate. And seeing that word just rapidly transform into like a podcast is something you watch. A podcast is two celebrities having a chat with incredibly visually prominent microphones. There's probably a wood paneled background. It's, you know, a little carafe of water or whatever. It's like, it's quite frightening because you think, actually, if that word just entirely means a new thing, this whole space that we love that's like full of ideas and artists and experiments and like, you know, really interesting documentarians, is kind of, well, what, you know, does that just evaporate if it's not paid for, if people don't even know that it's there? Like a lot of the time. And name it. Have you ever looked at the Wikipedia page for radio documentary? It's really dispiriting. Talking no. about like respect for them.
I'll do it after this just to, you know, make myself feel worse than I really do.
Well, it's just like really odd. Like if you look up anything, any kind of bit of history, there are so few traces online. And like, I don't know how you heard old work in the first place. But like, for me, I'm either like stumbling across it by chance. Some other radio producer that I know is like, shit, you got to listen to this. And they had some like burnt CD or like would email me something or whatever. Yeah. And so you get these tiny little fragments of something, but like it's very, very hard to access.
Yeah. I usually hear stuff from word of mouth or, I mean, Ben does, you know, the vast share of the curation. And honest to God, I don't know how he finds stuff. It's like, I think he's like on PRX, just like,
so browsing deep, knee deep in PRX
to... Yeah, he's like literally digging in the crates, like I have no idea. But yeah, like a lot of stuff is honestly just word of mouth. Yeah. And then like going onto the oldest website imaginable and being like, hope this file works. Like...
Well, then, speaking of which, have you, like, my favorite old radio garden is the New American Radio website. Have you ever been to that? Which is incredible. Like, one, just the New American Radio Project, I feel so excited that it existed for so long. This world of like weekly half hour radio art broadcasts that were kind of going out across a decade. And there's this, the website is beautiful. It's like Space Jam website level old internet and an archive that still works. And every time I go to check on it, I'm just like, oh God, I just want to make sure this stuff exists. Because like that fragility, you know, we're talking about radio kind of evaporating into the ether. But actually, more and more now I'm thinking about like the fragility of digital space, you know, and that's like, there was that really powerful statement on UbuWeb, I think, was it last year, when kind of horrendous things were happening with like wiping out websites, archive stories, and kind of talking about this idea of archiving and kind of holding a memory of the space that you're in. But I think, a lot of the work that we've encountered that felt more permanent because it was podcast and you were downloading it is like, oh shit, that's actually, you know, I downloaded that to a bit of tech that I don't use anymore. Or it's,
It also has its own... quite a lot of weaknesses as well, just keeping things digital. But bringing it back to Radio Atlas, so because a lot of the work is not, you don't speak any of these languages, like how are you finding stuff?
So lots of it comes from like these competitions that you get. So like if you go to any of these radio festivals that are like international European ones, people have to produce because of the like horrible dominance of the English language, people like produce transcripts in English. So lots of the things that I've encountered, you know, either there are historic things where someone still has the transcript that has been made so I can hear it, or, you know, I'm encountering it in that space. Loads of it is recommendations. So I would ask the producers who I knew were making work I was really excited by now, would say like, oh, who shaped the way that you're making work? Like, what things have you heard that changed how you thought about it? So that's, for example, how I ended up with this Swedish documentarian, Suzanne Björkman, whose work is on the website, who I'd really recommend, who was like a really big figure for lots of kind of Swedish makers that I'd encountered. And you sort of, you get curious and you try and dig things out. Sometimes, you know, you kind of hear a rumor about something and like someone helps you translate it or pay for translations that kind of get made. Sometimes producers have translated their own work and there'll be these little sort of snatches of things. But it is, you know, it's like, it's got all the problems of actual cartography. It's why it's called like Radio Atlas. This is this like thing that I happen to be kind of encountering through what I'm able to hear. And it's not a comprehensive space for anything. It's just these little glimpses that are hopefully like the sort of a really long passive aggressive project for 10 years being like, you know, there's other stuff out there. Like, wouldn't it be like, you're talking about film. It's like, imagine this world of film where you just like didn't acknowledge films that came from other countries. And you're like, I can't learn anything from that. Who's Agnes Varda? I don't need to know anything about that. You know, it's like, yeah, it's kind of that sort of the world that we live in, which is quite depressing, because the English language stuff is flowing across borders and things like Serial and This American mm-hmm. Life, and you hear that style starting to kind of stamp its way around, you know, different modes of production, because it can travel very easily and it's, you know, it's obviously very effective in lots of ways and lots of people like it, but I think it's a shame that it's not really a conversation, like a sort of a dialogue of different styles.
Yeah. This is kind of one of my questions about like aesthetics, because you use the example of This American Life in Serial. I also hear that being replicated all of the time. I guess I'm curious what other types of aesthetics or narrative or storytelling traditions you've noticed while you've been curating that are coming from other places and maybe have influenced your work.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that kind of, what has influenced my work that I've had? Like, there's so many different ways of approaching it. It's like, I feel like a lot of the styles that dominate at the moment feel very kind of breathless and literal. Like, I was listening to something the other day that wasn't on any of the podcasts we're talking about. It was on a British podcast where someone like introduced themselves and they were like, this, I'm blah, 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 and this is what I do. And then the presenter came in and was like, this is blah, 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 and this is what they do. And I'm like, do you think I'm asleep? Like, why are you telling me everything? Or someone says like, I was feeling sad. And then they'll come in and be like, they were feeling sad. And it's like, I know. But so yeah, I think I get excited by work that trusts a listener and that allows for a certain amount of like attention and care. You know, I think radio that excites me, or podcasting, like anything in sound, the thing that's thrilling is this act of co-creation with a listener, that like the work isn't made until it's heard and someone is kind of creating those images inside themselves. And like the work that's been meaningful to me in my life, like I could still give you sort of word for word, like I could almost sing you radio documentaries that have kind of lodged in my body somehow. Yes. Or like I can tell you exactly where I was when I heard them, what I was looking at, you know. And I think that is coming from a space of trust. It's like work that doesn't fear silence, space, ambiguity, the idea that you are kind of navigating these inner landscapes, which is like the beauty of what we do. You know, TV and so it felt like, you know, these are kind of worlds where you're looking at the outside of people a lot of the time, and to be filmed, to be conscious of being looked at, does shift the way that people talk a lot of the time, in a way that like holding, you know, I'm holding the microphone right now that is so unimpressive looking. Like anytime I get it out in front of an interviewee, they sort of almost laugh and they're like, oh, that, like that. Like I'm just getting out this really embarrassing little dictaphone. But it's like you can have this much more intimate conversation with people, and like an inner conversation. And I think that's what's interesting to me about this world, much more than like, you know, stories, like what's a good story, you know. Like stories are kind of pacifying, I think, a lot of the time, things that kind of calm you down. But if you're active as a listener, I don't know, it's you're engaging in something different.
I really also love ambiguity. And just to talk about film one more time, I do think that in filmmaking tradition, there's a lot more room for ambiguity sometimes, like quite a bit, especially when you're talking about like more avant-garde and experimental filmmaking. Like, I remember the doc that I was talking about that I took to the film festival, I had sent that to some radio people and I had sent it to some filmmakers. And the radio people were like, I need to know your motivation. I don't understand who these people are. Blah, 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 blah. Like, yeah. Really the handholding. And all the filmmakers were like, love the journey I was on. So gorgeous. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, just there was a tolerance for maybe not knowing the full story.
Yeah.
And I feel like when I'm browsing kind of the radio atlas, I just feel like there's space, like in some of the work, like there's just breath, there's ambiguity, there's me piecing together a story a little more sometimes and maybe putting my own self somewhere in there. And
that's so nice. Yeah. I mean, I hope that's kind of how it feels. Like, that's why a lot of the stuff that's up there is because I have that same relationship with it. It stays with you much longer, I guess. But there's all these things of like, we're in this really vast medium that, because we have this really crappy language where we've either like borrowed stuff from other mediums or we don't really know how to talk about what we're doing, we can kind of talk about it all like it's this big mass, like the radio, podcasting, like it has never been and should never be one thing. And mm-hmm. So, you know, like, I think we want these things that offer, you know, entertainment or kind of liveness or information or news or fact, like, you want stuff that's working that way. It's just like, absolutely. Let's not lose the fucking imagination.
Yeah.
And this sense of the inner world and this sense of something that is like only can exist in this medium, like sound and ambiguity, you know, and how time exists. Like, there are all these things that are really, really particular to the world that we work in that are like, have vast creative possibilities. And I'm just astonished, like, how little we talk about them.
Yes, I feel there has to be, we need like more language. And like, of course, I love a good juicy story. I need the news. Like, yeah. I need everything. I need it all. Just to kind of wrap up, I just want to talk about some of the pieces that we have on the Selects channel.
Yes.
We have a piece called The Double by the Danish producer Thomas Anderson, which won a Third Coast in 2016, which is kind of like a bit of a thriller-ish about this man, Thomas Anderson, and then another Thomas Anderson.
They do good. Third Ear do very, very good thrillers, the kind of the Danish podcasting powerhouses who kind of sound design, it's very, very immersive and cinematic.
I mean, I feel Woman on the Ice also was Danish and kind of has a similar, it's a very different story, but it's also, I feel like it's Halloween worthy in some ways, like it's a ghost story.
It is, and it's got such a depth of feeling that I think is testament to Rege Haut and how she is kind of, yeah, she just builds such atmospheric, immersive worlds. And there's more of her work on the website as well if you want to sort of hear more things. She also makes work across lots of different languages. She's like appallingly talented.
Yes, I feel similarly about her work.
Yeah, she's magic.
She really is. And then let's talk briefly about this piece, Every Day Something Disappears. Yeah. It's from 1993. It's about memory loss, maybe dementia or Alzheimer's. And that piece mixes documentary and fiction. Could you talk about that work briefly?
Yeah. In Every Day Something Disappears, you're moving between this really sort of intimate observational world inside this home, and you get a sense of like the different floors as people's memory loss progresses and different things kind of slip away, and you are speaking with the residents, you're also speaking with people who kind of work in the home, who sort of offer this extraordinary like perspective where they're just these little sort of tiny stories, vignettes, images that kind of lodge with you in such a deep and, you know, beyond someone just generally describing what's going on. You know, there's a man who sort of takes you to this door, which is the exit door that will kind of lock at the end of the night. And you hear the sound of people kind of rattling that door and how it kind of reverberates around the empty space. And he's talking about this, you know, because everybody wants to go home. Everybody wants to go home and they want to see their partner, but their partner died many years ago. They want to see their kids, but their kids are married and they've left. And it's just the way in which he's observing with so much kind of tenderness and humanity. But, you know, you feel the pain of how people kind of navigate watching this happen to the people that they love. And this is all interwoven with this fictionalized narrative, which is an adaptation of a novel where a pianist is describing his memory starting to go and feeling a sense. So you get the kind of the internal feeling as well of what it might be like to start to feel this inside yourself rather than to be watching from the viewpoint of, you know, the family or the medical professional who's kind of observing from the outside.
Yeah, I love that the documentary elements of it are kind of being held in this container of the fiction. And those two pieces are kind of in conversation with each other.
Yeah, I suppose it takes it into a space slightly outside of time somehow when you kind of blur those boundaries between the fictional and the real. You know, you no longer feel I'm sort of listening to this kind of time capsule of a moment in this place. You start to feel I'm listening to the inner landscapes of people who are navigating memory loss.
How many pieces do you have up?
That is such a good question. I think on the podcast, there are like 84 maybe, but there are more than that on the website. Because when it started, it was just a web platform. And then a year later, I turned it into a podcast and started putting stuff out through that. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, very cool. Thank you, Eleanor. We have a few pieces from Radio Atlas on the Selects channel right now. So check those out. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
That was Eleanor McDowell, the founder of Radio Atlas. And to think, before Radio Atlas, there was no real way for the public to easily access works that were produced in languages other than English. I've been ruminating on this idea of aesthetics for some time. There was a radio festival called Resonate in November that I went to, and during a talk, there was a question about why and how it's so hard to build audiences for storytelling-type podcasts in other countries. While I'm generalizing, the talk was specifically about China. Someone presented an idea that I haven't been able to stop thinking about. They said that maybe it's not that there isn't an appetite, but rather we're replicating a Western model of storytelling that's not resonating with those audiences in China, for example. And that seems so obvious to me now. And it just really makes me appreciate a project like Radio Atlas, where I get to experience the newness of experiencing someone else's storytelling tradition. That's all for today. Stay tuned here for more stuff dug out of the crates just for you. The Selects podcast is executive produced by Ben Riskin, Bianca Grimshaw, and me, Mitra Kaboli, and was created by Roomtone. The Selects podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, creator-owned, listener-supported podcasts.